Yes, so first of all, I'd like to thank the organizers for allowing me to speak. And this is joint work with Robert Koenig. And you can find our paper on the archive. So maybe to give you some overview what I'm going to talk about. So you already heard a lot about channel coding yesterday. Here I will be particularly interested in transmitting classical information, and so I'll remind you again what the task is that we're trying to solve, and in particular, what is a strong converse, so what are we actually trying to do. Then I'll tell you, state our result, and give you an overview of the proof. And I will conclude with some open questions, and actually I will also briefly talk about an application, which is actually quite practical. For our result, should anyone care. Okay. So you've seen this all before. You have access to little n copies of some noisy channel n, and you're trying to transmit n bits of classical information. So to protect this information, you can perform some encoding, and in the end, some decoding, and hopefully what you output here is going to be equal to the original input. So here, I mean, I'm interested in where this string here is chosen uniformly at random. So here we want to output a guess. And the quantity I'm interested in is the success probability of transmitting a randomly chosen string. So the success probability of an n-bit string is the maximization over all possible encodings and decodings. So here we average over all possible strings. And this here is the probability that for our choice of encoding and decoding, the output at the end is equal to the input. I'm sure actually you all know about this. And in particular, I will say that the transmission is reliable if the success probability is 1. Or actually in the limit of large n, it will tend to 1. So just to give you an example that you're actually all familiar with, namely the qubit identity channel. So we're trying to transmit n bits, and you have available little n qubits. So, I mean, I guess it's obvious that if the number of bits is less than the number of qubits that you have available, then, in fact, you can transmit information reliably simply by taking each classical bit and encoding it into one qubit. If the number of input bits is strictly greater than the number of qubits that you have available, then Holevo has shown that there is no reliable transmission, so the success probability is bounded away from 1. So clearly there's some trade-off here between the number of bits that you want to transmit and the number of channel uses that you have available, and in particular, the quantity that I'm sure also familiar with is the rate of sending information, namely the number of bits that you want to transmit, n, divided by the number of channel uses, little n. So, I mean, the setting you're most familiar with, I guess, is the setting of classical channels. So this here is just classical, and this is some classical encoding into some error-correcting code. Again, I will only be interested in random n-bit strings. And associated with the classical capacity is a classical channel is a quantity called the capacity that Graham has told you about yesterday, in fact. And this, the classical capacity tells you basically how many bits you can transmit. In particular, so Shannon has shown in 1948 that we can reliably transmit n bits, so the success probability goes to 1, if and only if the rate is smaller or equal to the capacity. I'm sure you all know this. So what am I going to talk about here? So as I said, I will only consider sending classical information, and I will always implicitly think of the case where the number of channel uses goes to infinity. So as I already said, there are some regimes here. So the rate can be below the capacity, and as I said, so Shannon's theorem tells us that we can send m, so I've just rephrased it a bit, so the number of bits in terms of the number of channel uses times the rate reliably by using the channel n times. And this means the success probability goes to 1. So you might say, what happens above the capacity? So if the rate is above the capacity, then Wolfowitz has shown that for any classical channel, n, there exists some constant gamma, which is greater than 0, such that the success probability of sending n times r bits is upper bounded by this quantity here. And so, I mean, it's clear that if n goes to infinity, then the success probability will tend to 0. So why am I saying this? So this is what is referred to as a strong converse to channel coding. So maybe to say something about strong versus weak. So weak just tells you that the success probability is bounded away from 1, and strong tells you that in fact it will go to 0. And so why, I mean, should you care? So this means that the quantity, the capacity, really measures our ability to send information through the channel. So at below the capacity, we can do it well, perfectly. And above the capacity, we are basically doomed as n goes large. Okay. So what happens in the quantum setting? So Schumacher and Westmoreland and Holevo have shown that in fact the capacity, if the rate lies below the capacity of a now quantum channel, then there exists some encoding and decoding such that the capacity can be achieved, meaning that for rates below the capacity, the success probability goes to 1. So that's good. But what I want to talk about now is what happens if the rate lies above the capacity. And there are results known that I will discuss briefly, but only for cases where there are some restrictions. So we would really, what I want to address in this talk now, can we prove such a strong converse, as in the classical case, a statement of this form, for a quantum channel?
It has to be here because you're using the Holevo-Schumacher,
you
mean the restricted capacity.
Yes. So, yeah. Okay, so what is a strong converse in the quantum setting? So let me maybe say a bit first, what do these encodings and decodings look like for a quantum channel? So this is a quantum channel, and we want to send a classical n-bit string. And the encoding now takes the form that for every possible string x, we choose some particular density operator rho sub x, which goes through this channel. And in the end, we will perform some decoding, which takes the form of some PUVM that gives you a particular answer. So X is the string that we will actually output then at the end. So the success probability can now, I mean, from the obvious, be written in the following form. So we maximize, so over all possible encodings, rho sub X, and decodings, E sub X. And this here, I mean, it's just a success probability that given we have some certain input state in input encoding, it goes through the channel, we will actually obtain outcome X in the decoding process. So it's the probability that the output is equal to the input.
Yeah. Maybe what I said before, are you allowing now entangled encoding?
Ah, so actually in this talk, I will allow entangled encoding.
Yeah, yes. So your capacity is actually the regularization of the
yes, yeah. But Let me talk about this in a second.
Okay.
So, as a warm-up to see what kind of statement we are heading for, let's prove a strong converse for the qubit identity theorem. So we can perform some encodings, which in fact may be entangled. We now have the qubit identity channel, so we just have n qubits available, and we can perform any decoding we want. So this also, this decoding, just to emphasize, does not have to have product form, but it can act on all qubits at the same time. So here it is actually extremely easy to show such a strong converse. So this is the success probability of sending n times r bits, given that we use the identity channel. So we maximize over all encodings, and we have some possible encoding O and some possible decoding E. Now, I mean, clearly, because this relation holds, we can upper bound this quantity using this, which by using the fact that if we sum over all possible outcome X, the PVM elements sum up to the identity, we can just by simply rewriting obtain this statement. Now, as I said before, so it follows from Holevo that for the qubit identity channel, this capacity is 1. So if the rate here is greater than the capacity, so greater than 1, this goes to 0 exponentially. Now we want to do something like this for all, or actually a certain class of quantum channels. Okay. So what else do we know? So we do know some things. If we don't allow some entangled encoding, but we restrict ourselves to a product encoding. So we have some input string X, and we could encode it into some classical code word C of X. But the state that actually goes into this channel here, so F is a tensor product of noisy channels N, has tensor product form. So in this case, Andreas Winter and also Ogawa and Nakaoka have shown that the strong converse does hold. So if we restrict ourselves to such encodings, then we can show a strong converse. So note that a strong converse with such an assumption sort of gives a strong converse, you could say, for the product state capacity, where indeed I restrict myself to having only product states as inputs. So what makes this problem slightly more tricky is that because I actually now don't want to make the assumption of products encoding, but I want to allow you to use any possible, maybe entangled encoding, over all channel uses. So Hastings has recently shown that such entangled encodings can actually be useful if we are below the capacity. So it's not quite clear now whether, I mean, it's not immediately obvious what will happen when we go above the capacity. So just to maybe summarize, so far we only knew a weak converse for general channels without making this product state assumption. And I would like to also emphasize that just the mere fact that, say, the Holevo quantity is additive for certain classes of channels, and indeed, in fact, it is additive for all the channels that I will consider, does not automatically mean that a strong converse holds for such channels when we go above the capacity. Okay. Okay. So let me state now actually what our result is before we prove it. So as I said, we want to show a strong converse, and so we have some channels going from some input space to some output space. And in particular, our result will apply to the following channels. First of all, there is the qubit depolarizing channel. I'm sure you all know this channel, so with some probability r, it will leave the state rho intact, and with probability 1 minus r, it will replace it with a completely mixed state. it will also apply to any unital qubit channel, or in fact, more generally, for any channel that satisfies the following two properties. First of all, it is additive, or actually I'm calling it maximum, you know, you want to call it minimum output alpha entropy, for alpha greater than 1, and it's enough if this holds for alpha close to 1. So, if you don't know what this quantity is, don't worry, I will actually define it shortly. So it, what it means that it is additive is that this quantity for some tensor product channel takes this particular form. So this is the first condition that we want. The second condition that we want is that the channel is covariant with respect to some group. So it means that if I apply G here on the row, I can actually move it outside the channel. And we also want that the representation on the output space is irreducible. And so we will need both such conditions. And maybe for some people who already know about these things, I would just like to say that in fact this quantity here is additive if the maximum output alpha norm is multiplicative. Okay. So we show that for any such channels, I mean, so we want to have a strong converse, there exists some constant gamma greater than 0, such that the success probability decays exponentially. Okay. So let's see how we could do this. Maybe first of all I want to say, maybe you have already noticed, in fact the first two here are special cases. I've actually just mentioned them because many people are interested in these examples. So these two here are actually special cases of a channel of the form 3. So I will only talk about channels now of this form. Okay. So let me tell you the main steps that we're going to do. First of all, we want to get a handle on this success probability here. So we want it to decay exponentially, but we will first relate it to some entropic quantity that I will define shortly. We will then actually study properties of this quantity, which will allow us to show that it is in fact additive for the channels that we will consider. And then we'll get a strong converse. Okay, so let's start it. Okay. So in fact, throughout this talk, I want to do side by side what happens below the capacity and compare it to what we're going to do above the capacity. So you're probably all familiar what happens within the green box. So below the capacity, there are some particular quantities which are familiar. So there's the Holevo quantity of a channel, which is defined as the maximization of the Holevo quantity of an ensemble, where this maximization is taken over input distributions, P sub x, and input states to the channel, sigma sub x. I mean, I'm sure you know this. This is here is the von Neumann entropy. And in fact, for rates below the capacity, one can, in fact, lower bound success probability in terms of this quantity. Okay. So maybe we can define a similar quantity. And in fact, let's consider this quantity chi alpha, which you can think of as a Rényi entropic version of the Holevo quantity. So this alpha Holevo quantity is defined in the following way. And here we will always be interested in the value of this quantity for alpha greater, strictly greater than 1. So it's quite analogous. So here we have the Holevo quantity of an ensemble. Here we have the alpha Holevo quantity of an ensemble. And the alpha Holevo quantity of a channel is again given by the maximization over ensembles, so input distributions P sub x, and input to the channel sigma sub x. And in fact, we will relate the success probability to this quantity. Graham, you look suspicious.
Why is really one term in this context?
How do you mean, why is there only one term in the sky? You mean, why am I not writing out the set or having a subscript X here? Well, okay. Okay. So, here, I mean, surely it is somewhat convenient for a particular class of channel if this quantity, chi star, is additive for a particular class of channel. That's a convenient thing. So, in fact, for us, it will also be convenient if for our class of channel, this quantity chi alpha would be additive. And in fact, this is what we're going to show. But let's first see how we can actually relate the success probability to such a quantity. Okay. So let me use sigma sub x for the state that actually comes out of the channel. So rho of sub x is some encoding of some string x. So this is just the success probability. And now, in fact, following similar steps as Ogawa and Makaoka, we can bound this quantity using the fact that 1 over alpha for alpha greater than 0 is operator monotone. And in the second step, we've just used the fact that this holds. There's nothing magical going on. And so I'm claiming now that we can rewrite this quantity in this particular form. So this term here just comes from here. And the remainder comes from the fact that we had defined chi alpha in this way, just to put it down again. So this means that indeed, we can rewrite the success probability in terms of this quantity here. Now you might say, why should we care? Have we not maybe made our problem even more difficult? But maybe let's see where we can go with it. So let's now try and derive some properties of this quantity chi alpha. Okay. Again, we will take our inspiration from what happens below the capacities. And in fact, the first thing that we're going to do is we're going to relate chi alpha to yet another quantity, which turns out to be convenient for us. So, below the capacity, Schumacher and Westmoreland have shown in 2001 that in fact this quantity can be rewritten in terms of the relative entropy. I'm sure you all know what this is. This is how it's defined. Where here the minimization and maximization is taken over all input states to this general N. Well, I guess maybe you're getting into the scene. We will also look at a really entropic version of this quantity. I would like to emphasize, I mean, we're not the first people, in fact, using this quantity. Milan Yannadatta has used it, and also Pietz has used it. They were usually interested in the regime where alpha is smaller than 1, but same quantity. So for this quantity, we can again find a relation to this quantity chi alpha. It doesn't look quite as nice, but we still can get a relation. So in particular, we first show that this chi alpha is lower bounded by the alpha entropic, Rényi entropic version of this relative entropy, where the minimization is now simply taken over all states sigma on the output space. And we can also show an upper bound, where the minimization is taken over all input states to the general. Okay. So first we relate the success probability chi alpha. Now we will rewrite chi alpha. And let's see where we can go with this. So I actually don't want to talk about, let me go back. I don't want to talk about how we're going to prove this relation. Actually, we follow very closely the steps of Schumacher and Westmoreland, only with some small variations because they have a slightly different quantity. But you can find it in our paper. Okay. So now I want to use these things to prove that chi alpha is additive for our the channels of interest. Again, you probably realize what we're going to do. We're first going to look what happens below the capacity. So below the capacity, Holero has shown in 2002 that in fact for channels which have this particular group covariant property, we can rewrite chi alpha as log the dimension of the output system minus the minimum output entropy. So the minimum output entropy is just for Neumann entropy, but we minimize overall input to the channel N. So I guess it's quite clear what you're going to do. You're going to look at the Rényi entropic version of this quantity, which is defined as follows. Also, I would like to emphasize, I mean, people have used this quantity before, we did not introduce it. So we can talk about the minimum output alpha entropy, which again is the minimum of this alpha for Neumann entropy minimized over all input space rho. And in fact, we will show, so I will actually do this shortly, that chi alpha for our channels can be rewritten as log the dimension of the output system minus the minimum output alpha entropy. So, I mean, just to emphasize, we really take a lot of inspiration from what happens here to see where we have to go. So we've related chi alpha to the alpha, and I now want to use this. And in particular, we will show one more thing, which you can also find in our paper. It is not hard, I will not do it in this talk, that for our class of channels, chi alpha actually is equal to these quantities, where the optimum input state and the optimum output state is just maximally mixed state on the respective system. I mean, just to see whether that this is actually the same, I mean, it's easy to see that for our class of group covariant channels where the representation in the output system is irreducible, it is, of course, a unitary channel. So this is just equal to this. Okay. So let's do some rewriting. So let's rewrite this Rényi entropic version. So in fact, so what I'm going to rewrite now is what we have here, so which is equal to chi alpha. So in the first step, we're going to just use the definition of the alpha. So here, rho hat is this quantity here. So it's the output of the channel applied to rho. Sigma hat is just the maximally mixed state on the output system. And I mean, here really we just do some rewriting. And I mean, you can easily convince yourself using in fact the definitions of this of the minimum output alpha entropy to rewrite this quantity in this particular form. I mean, it's clear to see what's going on here. So this term leads to this one. And from the remainder, using this relation, we get this one. Okay. So as I said, the thing we are ultimately headed for is to show that chi alpha is additive for our channels. So we've shown on the previous slide, okay, let's go back. That this chi alpha here is in fact equal to this. So in order to show that chi alpha is additive, let's make one more easy observation about chi alpha. Namely, chi alpha is subadditive. So note that here, if you recall the definition, you have maximized over all input distributions and input states. And of course, we can restrict this maximization to half product form, which may not be the optimal one, which gives you the fact that chi alpha is subadditive. A second thing that we will use is the fact that the minimum output alpha entropy can be rewritten directly in the maximum output alpha norm, as I have claimed. So this is the definition of the minimum output alpha entropy, minimizing over all states rho. So here, I mean, you can just transport the minimum inside here, where it will become a maximum. And this quantity here is just this. So let's put everything together. So first, let's find the lower bound on chi alpha. So we had observed that chi alpha is subadditive. So it's bigger than that quantity. Now we're going to apply this relation here to chi alpha for some individual channel n. So this is just n times the dimension of the output system minus the minimum output alpha entropy. So this is what we had concluded here. So to upper bound the quantity chi alpha, we're going to again use the relation between chi alpha and the alpha entropic version of the Wien entropy to upper bound chi alpha. Actually, there's a row missing, I apologize. using this quantity. And so as I said, we had assumed that the minimum output alpha entropy is additive, and I guess it's clear that this in fact now holds if and only if this minimum output alpha norm is multiplicative. So we had already calculated on the previous slide what this quantity here actually is. Actually, I also realized now I'm missing a maximum on this slide. What this quantity is, namely it's n times the dimension of the output system, and now we have the minimum output alpha entropy of the tensor product of these channels. But as we had concluded, so if we now use the fact that this quantity here is additive, which was assumption number two that we had made, then in fact we get this here, which is just the same lower bound here. So I hope I have convinced you that for our class of channels, chi alpha is indeed additive and equal to this quantity here. So maybe just to say again where we have used our two assumptions. So we needed our assumption to not only, so this holds of course for any channel, but we had used assumption number one, namely that our channels have this group covariant property, to show that chi alpha is in fact equal to this here, where the output or input state is the maximum unique state. So this is the first thing we had used. And the second assumption, the fact that the minimum output alpha entropy is additive, we had needed now in this step. So we really need both things. Okay. Maybe to tell you what channels this holds for. So as I said, we need both properties. And examples of such channels are the d-dimensional depolarizing channel. So King has shown that this quantity is additive. It applies to all unitary qubit channels. In fact, so we need a small trick from here to, I mean it's just a small thing, for to satisfy this first fact that they are group covariant. And for example, other channels for which this alpha minimum output alpha norm is additive is the Werner-Hollevo channel, where it is additive for the interval between 1 and 2. But that would be enough for us. Okay. So we've done all of these things. We have rephrased the success probability. We related it to some other quantities. But ultimately, this helped us to prove additivity. And now I want to conclude and actually use all of these things to show that we obtain a strong convergence. Okay. So let's recall again this relation. You've all seen it many times now. The fact that for our channels chi alpha is additive, of course, means exactly this. So now, in fact, we are already done, because we can now use some results from Ogawa and Nakaoka, who have studied the case where we explicitly restrict ourselves to product encodings, and to show that the strong converse holds in this setting. But not that this quantity here is additive means that we are in this setting where we do have product encodings. And they have in fact shown that for all rates above this quantity, so in fact for our channels this chi is as far as additive, there exists some constant b which is strictly greater than 1, such that for all alpha in the interval between beta and 1, so excluding beta and 1, this quantity here is strictly positive. So we will just use the result, and I guess you can, it's immediately clear what's going to happen, because if this quantity here is positive, then this quantity here falls off exponentially as n grows large. So we're done. So this is the part about the strong converse, and I want to, in the remainder of the talk, just tell you a particular problem where we have applied this to. So maybe if there anybody has questions about the strong converse, we could do it now before. For these channels? Yes, in fact. So we will in fact use this strong converse in a particular cryptographic application, and there, in order to obtain the optimal security parameters, we perform this maximization problem. That's right. Yeah, I think it's equivalent. Yes, on the output space.
So in your assumptions, you set up assuming the quality for the additivity property true. It doesn't seem to have an absolute quantum like that. Would you still get the result? maybe not for the same way, but for some other, instead of having the activity with the decay and
yeah, that would be, yeah. But as Patrick has convinced me yesterday, so of course one can think about what other channels is chi alpha, for what other channels is chi alpha additive. Yeah, no. So Patrick has convinced me that there may, I don't know, I mean, so he's given some indication that there may exist channels for which this additivity violation is very large. Yes. So I do agree, yeah. Of course, yeah. Okay. Yes.
How can you avoid the problems related with the concavity of the ring?
Yes, but we yeah, we don't actually use any of it. We
don't. It doesn't matter because of
before I will go to some open questions, let me tell you one application, and I just want to explain the problem to you, just what do we use it for. So we use it in the so-called noisy storage model. Yes, there are some pictures. And the problem that we are trying to solve is the following. We have two parties, Alice and Bob. Alice holds some input X, unknown to Bob. Bob holds some input y, unknown to Alice, and they want to compute some function of x and y, where this function is known to both Alice and Bob, so they agree they want to evaluate a particular function. This would all be very easy, but Alice does not trust Bob, so Bob might be dishonest. So the protocol should ensure that whatever dishonest Bob might do, there's no way for him to learn more about x that he could possibly infer from the output of this function. And similarly, Bob does not trust Alice. So we want that, in fact, Alice cannot learn anything about Bob's input Y. So you might say, why should anyone care? So, I mean, in the ideal world, in the real world, we don't have such an ideal box. But all they can do is communicate over some channel, and we want to find the protocol that sort of acts like this ideal box. Why should you care? I mean, there is an application that you're all familiar with, namely, Alice holds some password. Bob is maybe a building or some other machine that Alice wants to identify herself to. So Alice walks up to the machine and says, I'm Alice. I claim I possess a particular password. So Bob, say an honest machine, could look up in his table which password Alice should have. And what they want to do is they want to compare the two. So are they the same or not? So security here means that maybe Bob is not really a building or so, or the ATM, someone else has put it there. So he should not be able to do more than just guess a password and see whether it matches Alice. And similarly, maybe Alice is dishonest and is trying to extract passwords from the machine. Then she should not be able to do more than just guess a password and see whether it works. So this is unfortunately impossible to do without making some assumptions. So, I guess, if you're not so familiar with cryptography, there are some primitives which have been shown to be impossible. And in fact, Lo has also shown that this task that I just described is impossible to do without assumptions. So some assumptions one can make are computational assumptions in the classical case, for example, that factoring is difficult. One can also, for example, assume that classical storage is bounded. So if a party tries to cheat, they cannot store more than a certain number of bits, which is somewhat hard to enforce in the classical setting. So in this noisy storage model, we assume that it's difficult to store quantum states in the following sense. So the adversary, the cheating party, can be all powerful. So he can factor and solve any problem in no time. Except during waiting times, which we introduce in the protocol, he cannot keep any quantum information except what he can encode, and in fact arbitrarily, so he maybe use some error correcting code or some such thing, into his quantum storage. And this quantum storage is described by some channel, F. And of particular interest to us are channels which are channels for which we get explicit security parameters, are channels which are tensor copies of some noisy channel N, So generally our input space will be tensor products of some particular d-dimensional space, where n is some noisy channel. And just to say, so from our strong converse, in fact, by performing this maximization problem, we can get explicit security parameters for our protocols that solve such tasks. So actually, all I wanted to say with this is we are actually interested in understanding the transmission of information at rates above the capacity, also for other channels. So to conclude with some open questions, so what have we done? So for these particular channels, we can, the strong converse, the fact that we have one, allows us to interpret the classical capacity really as a measure how useful is the channel for transmitting classical information. And we have some applications of this. And of course, it would be nice if one can prove such a strong converse for other classes of channels. I mean, in particular, so clearly one way to go would be to study this quantity chi alpha for other channels. In particular, I think it would be very interesting to do so for channels for which the Holeo quantity is non-additive. Maybe, say, I don't know, I guess, I don't expect this quantity to be additive. But, I mean, it would be interesting, so how additive is it, for, can it be at all? Or are there other classes where there's sort of a constant factor? So we'd really like to understand how this behaves. Yes, so thank you.